Hey everyone, just a quick note before we start the podcast. If you are enjoying these, make sure you subscribe to the podcast to stay up to date on all the new releases. It's also super helpful if you can leave a review in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you listen to this on. If you enjoy the holistic message we're spreading here and think more people need to hear this, your reviews help push the podcast up the podcast charts and more people find it, listen, and make the world a better place. And if you want to get even more from us, including weekly newsletters highlighting the latest and greatest in nootropic and mental health news and research, along with first dibs on new content and partner product deals, make sure you go on over to holisticnootropics.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and sign up with your name and email. I promise I won't spam you. Your support means the world to me and keeps this whole project going. With that, let's get into the podcast.
You're listening to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, your home for holistic, evidence-based cognitive enhancement strategies. And now your host, Eric Levi.
Hey, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, where we discuss holistic, lifestyle-based cognitive enhancement. My name is Eric. I'm a functional nutritional therapy practitioner. And today on the podcast, I have Susan Downs and Alex Voss. That's right, I'm giving you two for the price of one. Susan and Alex are the co-producers of a really interesting documentary film called The Big S. The film talks a lot about essentially the underwhelming effectiveness of the sick care system and all of the pieces that go into it, all of the dangers of the different chemicals in our food, our air, our water, the integration of big business into the healthcare system, and why that essentially sabotages the whole healthcare system. I mean, this film is loaded with a lot of interesting information, and it's all backed up by the scientific data. So Susan herself actually runs a really great podcast called the Occupy Health Podcast, and runs weekly Zoom meetings through the Silicon Valley Health Institute with all kinds of different physicians and mental health experts that talk about really the biggest health topics of the day. And Susan herself is a doctor at a very prestigious medical school here in America. So I highly recommend checking out her content, checking out more about what she does and what Alex does, and above anything else, checking out their film, The Big Secret. And we're going to have links to all this at the show notes, including all the references to everything we talk about today. You can find that at holisticnootropics.com/Big Secret. And if you are new to nootropics or you want to learn more about using supplements, diet, and lifestyle to hack your brain for peak performance, make sure you check out holisticnootropics.com. And with no further ado, everybody, enjoy my chat today with Susan and Alex. Susan Downs and Alex Voss, welcome to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast.
Glad to be here.
Likewise.
This is great. I'm excited to have you guys on. I just watched your film, The Big Secret. You guys produced it. You guys made it. You had a lot of really influential people in the health space talking about a lot of this topic of really the failure of the mainstream medical system. And there was a lot of interesting points made in it. There was a lot of things that were new to me that I know most people don't know. So I'm just curious, just to kind of start, why did you make the film? What was your reason for making the film?
Well, I guess I could start with, I started the film. I've been making documentaries and video programs for a number of years, and my health was going way downhill. I was 360 pounds. I was doing everything the doctor told me, and I was continually getting sicker. And so one of the ways I learn about something, I realized if you do a documentary about something, that's the way to really learn about it, if you're producing a documentary, because it gives you access to people that are knowledgeable about the subject. So I started this documentary not really knowing where I would go with it. I was trying to just find out what the truth was in the matter, because when you go online and you listen to people, you get a lot of conflicting data about what is good for your health. And so on that quest, when I was just going, trying to find people to interview, I ran across Dr. Susan Downs. She became the co-producer of the film. And I had a lot of stunning revelations about the healthcare system in which we all live. And, it, you know, when I used to believe, there was a time I believed that everybody had my best interest at heart when I went to the doctor's office. And I came to the conclusion after doing the movie that we actually live in a medical system. And I'm saying doctors are wonderful. I'm not criticizing doctors, but the big pharma agri system and some other influences in there, like the FDA and so forth, are functioning more for monetary gain than health and well-being of the patient. And it turned out to be a frightening revelation. And so what I found out was I had to dramatically change my paradigm about what made someone healthy. You know, a doctor would never tell you to change your nutrition. They just give you a pill usually and you go on. And so I had to dramatically change the way I did things to get healthier. And so this movie was the genesis of me trying to learn about that. But we did run across several frightening revelations and situations during the movie. So I'm going to ask Dr. Susan to chime in at that point.
Well, to me, health should be about finding the underlying cause and addressing it rather than just putting Band-Aids on symptoms. I mean, as a physician, we want to help, and we feel helpless when we can't. So I think there's motivation. Oh, let me give you a pill that will at least help. And that's the paradigm a lot of people are in. Let me give you a pill to help. But the pills are, if you look at it, just about everything, they're masking the symptoms. Okay, pills for high blood pressure. Well, it means your blood pressure is high. What is that due to? Is it due to excessive salt intake? Is it due to lack of magnesium? Is it due to diet? Same with diabetes. I mean, pre-diabetes, I mean, it probably 30% of us in the Western world have this, and it's a continuum. It's not just you walk in and your doctor says, oh, your morning blood sugar is 126. Here's a t-shirt. Here's the hat. You're welcome to the club. Welcome to the club of diabetes. So we need to look underneath at what's putting us in this direction. And we just want to give people information how to be proactive in their health.
Yeah, that's, you just nailed it on the head. And this is where my health journey began too, was needing care and not getting a solution, just getting Band-Aid after Band-Aid after Band-Aid. And for me, it was when I was younger and it was just antibiotics. It was a lot of antibiotics in my teens. And you know, when you're in the teens, you're in the 90s, nobody talked about this stuff. And now that I'm in my 30s, I feel like I'm still recovering from from those doses of antibiotics. You know, I didn't know I was just nuclear bombing all of this very important gut microbiota. And later on down the road, it would manifest as, I mean, gut issues, skin issues, emotional issues, blood pressure issues, just everything that has to do with the gut. I've experienced those symptoms. And had I not drawn away from the standard allopathic model, I mean, I'd be broke right now. I would be in debt, you know, and this is why so many people are in debt, because they just keep going back for more and more. And a lot of people just never question their doctor.
Well, you know, in the movie, I have a video that I videotaped of a Catholic priest who's got a briefcase, attaché case full of pill bottles that were prescribed to him by his various doctors. And so he was taking 32 pills a day, three times a day, and eventually his liver failed because of all the pharmaceuticals he was taking. And so they put him in hospice because of the liver failure. You're going to die. You know, that's what they told him. And they took him off all the pills he was taking, and all of a sudden his liver turned around. He got healthier, and then they put him, he wasn't going to die in the hospice, so they put him in the, an apartment to stay in for a while. Then they put him back on all the drugs, and then he turned back around, and then he died. And I found that very interesting, especially even with a Catholic priest. And so it's out of control. You know, the doctors are working, they're not seeing what people are taking in the interactions and what this stuff is doing to them. You know, I'm not saying all pharmaceuticals are bad, but I'm saying if you can find a natural alternative, you're a lot better off, or something that would eliminate dysfunction other than something that is synthetic.
Well, in the end, it's chemistry, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is biochemistry. Our bodies are laboratories, and these chemicals are highly volatile, and they call these things side effects, but really it's the effect. You know, when you have a genetic code that is built for a certain, that's basically the directions of how your body works. And then, you know, you factor in all of the physical stimuli you have just in your day, things you don't even realize, like chemicals in your water and chemicals in your, you know, in your environment and glyphosate on your food. And then you start putting in these chemicals that were synthesized in a lab and they were marketed for one purpose, but really do all of these other things because, you know, receptors in the body are, you know, sometimes unpredictable and we still don't know the science of the body. And so, you know, you have these side effects and then you go back to a doctor and a doctor says, okay, you got that side effect, but we're going to give you another thing for that side effect. And then another side effect pops up and they give you another thing for that thing. And it's just, I've seen these people in real life. I mean, the attaché, the briefcase in that film, I've seen that briefcase before. I've seen people's pill boxes, you know, and it's, and anybody who's ever worked in a restaurant knows when you go to serve a table, you see these pill boxes and they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So yeah, that's true.
It's all about money. You know, the more pills they can sell, the more money they make. And instead of just curing somebody, you know, they give you a statin drug, which is really bad for you. And instead of just saying, donate blood, exercise a little more, eat differently. That will give you a better shot at not having a heart attack than taking a statin drug. But they don't tell you how to actually cure the problem. They say, here, take a statin drug. And then you have all the damage from that. And you know, there's correlations that show a lot of problems with taking statin drugs and other types of pharmaceuticals, but there's also stuff in the food. So you're getting a whole load of toxins in whatever you eat if you're not very careful.
I see this a lot with the statins. You know, I have family members on statins and it frightens me. And I've watched, you know, cognitive decline. I haven't seen them get healthier. And I think a lot of it, most of it is fear-based. You know, when you go in and the doctor says your cholesterol is, you know, is high, I mean, you have this automatic association that cholesterol is high, I'm going to have a heart attack. What's the solution to a heart attack? Get the cholesterol low. How do you do that? The statin. So the math is already done in your head. The sales pitch has already been done in your head. The doctor just has to say, you know, and the doctor has the authority. The doctor, you respect the doctor. And like you said, I'm not going to come out and just start blaming doctors. Doctors are under some really intense, you know, they're under some real intense criteria to get patients in and out. These doctors' offices are busier than ever. They only have 10 minutes, sometimes less than that, to see a patient. I mean, how can you dive into a full health history of somebody and really understand what they need versus, well, you know, this pharma rep came in with, you know, bleached tips and just graduated college and, you know, they're listening to, you know, hip hop or whatever on their iPad. And then they roll in, they tell me they got some pamphlets. They tell me got cruise ship tickets for me if I dish out this much of this. So who am I to question these guys? You know, it's a tough situation for everybody.
Yeah. It's very unfortunate, but the bottom line is it's killing a lot of people as far as them dying prematurely and all the suffering they go through unnecessarily because of the situation we find ourselves in.
Yeah, for cholesterol, half the people who have heart attacks, their cholesterol is normal, and we need cholesterol. We make 80% of our cholesterol, so why don't we look at why are we making so much if that's an issue? We need cholesterol for our sex hormones and cell walls. And lowering cholesterol, it's not clear that has anything to do with reducing heart attacks.
I'm curious because I know you have a psychology background, Dr. Downs. And Do you see any correlations between the war on cholesterol, as in, you know, lowering this race to the bottom of lowering cholesterol and psychological issues?
Well, I see a rather simplistic way to look at the world. There's good and there's bad and there's no grays. And we've got to have this war on drugs, war on opiates, war on cholesterol. But it was misguided. I mean, it's not the cholesterol that's the problem. It's the sugar we eat. I mean, one molecule of sugar might take over 20 molecules of magnesium. And so it's going to deplete all your nutrients. It's going to lead to high insulin. It's going to lead to insulin resistance, which leads to inflammation, oxidative stress, and everything. And toxins is an important role in this because there's several different toxins that will lead you to diabetes. through different mechanisms. Some of the toxins will affect the receptors, others will affect the islet cells that make the insulin. And so you get a real whammy. And I mean, I've had a radio podcast called Occupy Health, and some of the people said, if you've got no inflammation or oxidative stress, you don't have any disease. If you don't have any disease, you don't have any oxidative stress, and all these toxins cause oxidative stress. So it's kind of a big symphony. We've got to look at all the contributing factors. I mean, even interestingly enough about Alzheimer's, there's this guy named Dale Bredesen, who says there's all these contributing factors to Alzheimer's. So let's pick the 8 main ones, fix it. I mean, he's reversed cognitive decline. I've written articles on autism, same thing. It's a final common pathway of everything gone wrong. I've seen women with very autistic kids who couldn't even communicate. But one woman, I guess Dr. Reed, her kid became the most social kid in school by eliminating glutamate and diet. Another person, the kid regained function by eliminating gluten. Every kid's different, and you know, and different problems. So, I mean, it's multifactorial. For Alzheimer's, Dr. Bredesen has put 5 different categories of it. One is the one related to insulin, because they call Alzheimer's, for example, diabetes 3. And so, it's, you know, you get the high sugars, the insulin goes high, insulin resistance, and the whole thing goes downhill with inflammation, oxidative stress. Another one he calls the catabolic anabolic. Anabolic is when you're building, catabolic when you're tearing apart. And that form of Alzheimer's, the catabolic tearing apart, is greater than the anabolic. The third category of Alzheimer's he calls due to toxins. And then the other two are permutations of the above. So so many different factors. But just to give a pill, because, you know, it's all, so you find one symptom, oh my God, the cholesterol is high, let's give statins. What do statins do? They affect the nerve coverings, so you get all these muscle issues. They lower adiponectin, so it's kind of a pathway to diabetes. They lower CoQ10, so that's going to give you your mitochondria, your energy producing a shock. Your mitochondria goes down, everything starts to go down. It's all interconnected. But I've been in several doctor's offices, and when my cholesterol's been 200, which is, you know, anything under 225, you've got a, you know, less chance of dying than above, but they keep wanting to give me a statin. And I ask them, don't you care why my cholesterol's at this horrible value of 200? And I told them I've got a very high lipoprotein A, and this, you know, at an extremely well-known university. What's that? Mm-hmm. It's an immutable risk factor. Statins ain't going to do squat. So, the 10-minute interviews where they, you know, they've got this knee-jerk reaction, they want to help, and this pre-programmed reaction that even a computer can do, here's your statin. It's not serving us.
It's not. It's not. And years ago, I read this really interesting book. It's called Overdosed, and I couldn't tell you the author, but it was a guy, I believe he, I think he was in an emergency. I don't remember exactly what his specialty in medicine was. He might have even been a lawyer of some sort, but he was talking about this exact thing, you know, this exact dynamic of people getting prescribed all of these medications and the 10-minute interview in the doctor's office. And really, like, how does that happen? And there is a lot that falls on the doctor's shoulders, but so much of this is due to patients demanding these medications. You know, they go in and they don't want to leave without a medication. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but probably one of the biggest ones is the direct-to-consumer marketing. And when they started allowing that, I forget the year, it might have been in the early 90s or something, there was a law that was passed, and they basically said you can advertise, pharmaceutical companies can advertise direct to consumers, and then you started seeing all of these pharma ads on, you know, TV. It's like, I haven't had a TV for about a decade now. And every time I get to a TV, like in a hotel room or something, I'll flick on the news and I'm just blown away by how, but it's maybe 2 car commercials and the rest of it's all pharma ads, you know, or if you watch football or something, it's, you know, a car commercials, beer commercials, McDonald's commercials, and pharma ads. And so people, and the pharma ads are super slick. They don't talk about the drug in a 30-second commercial. They'll mention the drug twice, and then it's a guy like on a rowboat or something, or, you know, people playing volleyball or going out for ice cream, but it's for like a statin drug or an antidepressant. And it's this subliminal marketing, I think, just people get into the doctor's office and they demand the drug.
Well, you know, the scary part about that is that when the advertising revenue going to like the news corporations comes from Big Pharma, they're never going to say anything bad about Big Pharma. You know, your cable news network or your local TV, they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them, because that's where their money comes from. And even though there's been some really horrific problems with pharmaceuticals, you're not going to see a lot of that on the news, because basically the pharmaceutical companies own the news companies, you know, the news reporting agencies, to a large extent, because that's where their money comes from. And, you know, that's one thing. When we went to do the film, I just wanted to come out with the truth. I wanted to have the answers. I tried to make them as simple as possible, as quick as possible. You know, how did we get here? Why is this going on? And then we went through a sequence of events that explained, you have this problem, you have another problem. Like we talked about hexafluorosilicic acid in the water. We talked about high fructose corn syrup and how we have this huge spike in obesity and diabetes and all the dysfunction because we switched from sugar to high fructose corn syrup and all the effects that had. And so I tried with Susan, and she really helped me, you know, get this all worked out to at least put the basic things, the major things that are affecting our health. And I thought, you know, when people see this, they'll be crazy about it. They'll love it. And we have had a lot of good response, but we also ran into a lot of censorship on this because we were stepping on some pretty big toes when we started telling the truth of the matter about what's going on with our health.
Yeah, thank you, Congressman Adam Schiff. I mean, thank God we've got him to tell us what we can watch and what we can't watch. And I'm concerned about the news nowadays because they're making all these recent protests look like the summer of eternal love. And I mean, I just wonder if we can even trust any news reporting anywhere.
Well, I mean, as terrible as it is, this is why I in such an awful way, I laugh when they talk about the opioid crisis, because, you know, the CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and whoever it is, they'll come on and they'll report about the opioid crisis, and they'll have, you know, experts come on and they'll talk about the opioid crisis. And it's always like, we have no idea how the opioid crisis just exploded. Well, maybe it's probably because you're sponsored by companies that make opioids. You know, maybe it's the news that we're getting is their bills are paid from the companies that are actually producing the opioids, and then they run commercials for these very opioids, and people go to the doctors and ask for them. And
let me tell you what I've seen. You know, 10, 15 years ago, I mean, I would avoid opiates and benzodiazepines such as Valium, et cetera, like the plague. I wouldn't give them. Then the medical board comes out and says, we've got to treat pain. We cannot have people in pain. You've got to take 12 hours on pain management, and you have to give them the opiates because, you know, you can't be cruel to these people. And we had to take 12 hours. And as I recall, the gist is you've got to give them the opiates. And then now it's swung another way. So they brought the medical board on board on this.
And the medical board is paid for by the pharmaceutical companies?
Oh, follow the money.
There's a lot of influence going on from Big Pharma. They tend to run the FDA and everybody that could interfere with what they would do.
Oh, let me tell you about the FDA. Oh, you want to get into stuff that's juicy. We've got memos. The FDA scientists said, do not proceed with GMOs. There's a lot of questions here. They proceeded. We had memos that, you know, the sugar industry is trying to bribe Harvard. We've also interviewed a guy named E.G. Balianados that worked for the EPA. This is in the next film. That worked for the EPA for 25 years, and they never had any studies. It was a fake lab to do the looking at the pesticides. He never mentioned Monsanto, but I assume that they're prominent in this, and that they never had the tests. They just made up all the studies, and I don't think our government's serving us well. You can look at any government agency, and there's a revolving door between the very high executives in the industry they're monitoring, and it's just a revolving door. Pick any agency, FCC, FDA, EPA, you know, it's just something's wrong, and I feel our Congress is being bought.
And how do they do that? How do they fake studies? I've always wondered about that. You know, like I've heard of ghostwriters. But who does that? Because it seems like these. I'm not going to just say these scientists have bad intentions. You know, but Is it a thing where they just kind of backdoor it and they leave the papers on their desk and they say your assignment today is to essentially sign these papers and those papers essentially okay these studies? I just don't get how that works. Well,
check into the Monsanto papers because there's a lot of data that the Monsanto people are actually writing the articles and they get some doctor to go along with it. According to Villanados, they had a lab. They did 2 months of studies with results, and then they just made up the rest. And the lab was a fraud. Research studies, I mean, Kelly Brogan in our movie mentioned, this is one case, there are, 38 studies of things that came out positively. They published things that came out negatively. They didn't have to. And she said it was like throwing dice. I mean, you just keep doing a study until one comes out your way and you don't have to mention the others. But I think money is a motivating factor. There are a lot. There are some people. Look at the thing on hydrochloroquine. It just came out that, oh, this is horrible. And then they had to retract the article.
That's a prime example there.
And the studies done by industry, pick anything, FCC and EMF and stuff, and the studies done by the industry overwhelmingly show this is God's gift to mankind. And the independent researchers say, wait a minute, there's a lot of risk here. And it looks like our Congress doesn't care about risk. They're forcing GMOs on us. They're forcing 5G on us, fluoridating the water, all these toxins. And, they don't care. I mean, all these things have such adverse health effects. And why isn't anybody care about this? There was such a circus in Washington for the last 3 years. Nobody noticed they were censoring. The CEO of YouTube said that YouTube's going to censor information on vitamin C and curcumin. What the F?
Hey, everybody. Just wanted to take a second to break away from the podcast to tell you about my favorite pre-formulated nootropic stack. That is Mind Lab Pro. I look at Mind Lab Pro kind of like a nootropic multivitamin. If you're a nootropic newbie, this is a great nootropic stack to start with. Even if you're an experienced nootropic user, maybe you've been putting together your own kind of different stacks using different nootropics together, and maybe you've hit a plateau, maybe you just haven't found the one that works right for you. Maybe you found something that worked right, and then you try to pair it with something else, and the whole thing kind of fell apart, and then that original nootropic doesn't work for you. MindLab Pro is pre-formulated. It's made by scientists, so they actually pre-formulate it with the right amounts, the right ingredients, 11 research-backed nootropic ingredients, by the way, that are proven to help boost your cognition, your memory, your focus, your mood, all those benefits you look for out of a nootropic, especially a nootropic stack, you're going to get with MindLab Pro. You've got citicoline, which is going to boost your acetylcholine production. It's going to boost dopamine. It's going to boost your focus. It's going to boost your memory, your processing speed. You've got phosphatidylserine, which is going to help you with nerve growth factor. It's got glucose metabolism enhancement. You've got the modulation of the HPA axis. It's going to help your energy levels. It's going to help your mood. It's going to help your stress levels, which is so important. You've got Bacopa monnieri. You've got rhodiola, an amazing adaptogenic herb. You got one of the most popular nootropic or holistic nootropics out there, lion's mane mushroom. You're getting that nerve growth factor, literally growing new brain, promotes healthy brain cell function. So many amazing benefits from lion's mane. You've also got things like maritime pine bark extract, and of course, N-acetyl L-tyrosine, which is going to help boost dopamine levels, and of course, norepinephrine levels. So if you need a boost in mood, if you're dealing with some depression, if you just need to be a little bit more lively, let's say you're kind of falling apart going out in social situations, assuming you're breaking your social distancing, you're going out, you need a little N-acetyl L-tyrosine. And then of course, one of the classic great nootropics, L-theanine. Hit that alpha brainwave, get into flow. If you're trying to pair something with coffee to take the edge off a little bit, or if you're just getting rid of caffeine in general, L-theanine is a great nootropic amino acid. And then you have the cofactors, the B vitamins to help really put everything together, B6, B9, B12, it's like you can have all these amazing nootropics together, but if you don't turn on the fire, if you don't stir the pot, that's what the B vitamins do. They help get everything together so that it's metabolized, it hits your brain, it works the way it's supposed to do. too. Right now, we have a deal with Mind Lab Pro directly through holisticnootropics.com. You get 3 months of Mind Lab Pro with an extra fourth month for free. Just go on over to holisticnootropics.com/Mind Lab Pro. Again, holisticnootropics.com/Mind Lab Pro. Get one free month of Mind Lab Pro with the purchase of three. You can't beat this deal. The nootropic multivitamin Mind Lab Pro, my favorite. Okay, let's get back into the podcast. Wow.
It's frightening because, you know, vitamin C is one of the best things to keep you well. And the head of YouTube says, you know, that as if vitamin C was some sort of quackery when it's been around for years. And, you know, that's the thing, you know, with this COVID-19, if you can develop your immunity by taking quality vitamins and supplements to a point where your body's better able to deal with an infection, that's a good place to start. And, you know, this all this stuff about the hydroxychloroquine, you know, when you, there was a lot of evidence, and there's a lot of doctors that really have a lot of success, they say, with hydroxychloroquine, but it's an inexpensive drug. And it's like they're pushing away the inexpensive ways of treating a problem because they wanted to make the way for something that's expensive and profitable.
And doctors' offices that they were giving out vitamin C were raided by the FBI, and they were given a gag order.
Wow. I didn't know that. The hydroxychloroquine thing is interesting to me because, I mean, I'll be the first to say I don't know much about it. I know people use it for lupus. I know it's a malaria drug, and I've also heard that it is super cheap. And actually one of the first videos I follow this guy, he's a medical professor on YouTube. And he, you know, when COVID first started, he was putting out these COVID daily updates, and he was just kind of following the studies and the papers. And one of his first videos on COVID was doctors are seeing success with zinc and hydroxychloroquine. And then I started hearing all the negative press to it. And of course, because I'm in this world and ever since I jumped the shark into holistic health versus the sick care system, it's, you know, there's an innate bullshit sensor in my brain that goes off whenever I start hearing, you know, words like debunked and quackery. And I always smell something fishy. And when they start coming out, especially when the president starts saying like, there's evidence we might use it. Granted, I would not put my, you know, health, integrity on someone like Trump. But at the same time, it's like, I understand this media battle that's going on. Basically what I'm saying is the hydroxychloroquine thing has been so over-politicized in the same way that all of these other remedies like vitamin C, you know, even before the COVID thing happened, that not only do I not know what to think, every time I hear a quote unquote expert say about how bad hydroxychloroquine is, and I've seen the studies come out that say that the studies that they were doing on it had to be stopped because they weren't even being done correctly. The whole thing throws the whole process into question.
Well, you know, go ahead.
Silicon Valley Health Institute, we've had weekly Zoom meetings on experts on COVID, including an Irish virologist and some of the top people. And they're all saying vitamin C, vitamin D, and the hydrochloroquine you have to take with zinc. Virologist Dolores Cahill from Ireland says that, you know, that you only need two or three of the pills of hydrochloroquine, and you have to take it with zinc because it escorts the zinc into the cell so zinc can do its thing. But the only one or two pills, and the risk with hydrochloroquine is cardiac arrhythmias and problems. So you can monitor people, their QTC interval and their heart condition, or you can just monitor those people and not give it to them. And she says you only need one or two pills because a half-life is 3 weeks. So I'm not an expert on it, but we have weekly Zoom meetings with experts. It's S as in Sally, V as in Victor, H as in health, I, Silicon Valley Health Institute. These are weekly Zoom meetings, and you can tune in and ask the experts questions.
You know, one of the interesting things about the negative things they said about hydroxychloroquine, if you look at the research studies that were with the VA hospital, that was mainly data dredging. They didn't follow the protocols that you would normally follow to actually do a good research study. And there was this mystery corporation that appeared, and it was basically something like Cambridge Analytica for hydroxychloroquine. Here's this mystery corporation that just appeared. They do a lot of negative information, but it's just a front, and it didn't have anything to do with real research. Yet that's taken as the most expert study when there's so many doctors that say good things about it. I don't know if it's good or bad particularly, but I do know there's a lot of doctors that seem to think it's very useful. And here's this research study debunked because there was this false entity that came into the play of the study, and then they had to reverse what they said about it because they found out this was a fake company.
That's the problem with so many studies, is we're so subservient to them, and yet there's so many of these like statistical manipulations and inaccurate ways of even doing the data. Like I heard this guy Brett Weinstein on the Joe Rogan podcast a couple of days ago talking about how all of these, I forget what drug it was, but rats they use in these drug trials, they don't have the correct genetic sequence or they don't have they're not the correct rats essentially to be doing these studies with in the first place. And he raised this to these different medical boards and they basically shut him down. Yet he has the data to prove that, you know, when we do a rat study and the rats, and the fact that we're relying on rats to tell us how our human body works, I think that's a little goofy. But the fact that these rats have these genetic mutations or these innate inaccurate responses to things, and we put all of our weight to make important medical decisions on that, and we can't even have that debate. But yet these medical journals that we know have been bought off by Big Pharma are the ones that are dictating all of the medical policy. I think we got to start there.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is, I have that sensor, the BS sensor, when I start hearing a lot of this stuff, and then there's a ring of truth over here. But the bottom line is, you know, if you look at basic biochemistry and how the body works, and I'm not an expert, I'm a filmmaker, but I've been interviewing experts all over the place, and there's a consensus that the body, you follow the basic biochemistry, and you give the body what it needs to function. The body is smart enough to figure out how to function if you give it the materials it needs to function. And you remove the toxins that get in the way of it working. And that's basically a simple thing that you can really improve your health dramatically just by the foods you eat, the avoidance of toxins, and so forth.
The toxins are the big one. The more I also speak to experts in these fields, the more I believe a lot of doctors and a lot of people are on board with this idea that the toxic burden in our world right now is just overwhelming. And this is why supplementation is so necessary, because, you know, we have these 2 million-year-old bodies that just in the last 100 years have now had to adapt very quickly to, I don't know how, thousands of new chemicals that were just introduced and were just figuring out how they work in the body. And pair that on top of the fact that we're just being overloaded with these chemicals, yeah. You know, our food being sprayed with these pesticides. And, you know, like you guys talked about in the film, the fluoride in the water, yeah, that we're being told is necessary for our teeth, where there's no actual real data to even back that up. And it's causing all of these neurological, I mean, there's so many elements that cause these neurological problems. But
you know, the really strange thing about fluoride, and no one ever talks about this, but they have to put tons of hexafluorosilicic acid in the water supply, supposedly to help with dental caries, so the children don't have cavities. But the thing is, if fluoride is so good for dental health for children, why is the fluoride only put in the areas of town or the municipalities that are poor? You do not have fluoridation in wealthy areas in the United States. In Dallas, Texas, we have an area called University Park, Island Park. They do not fluoridate. They do not fluoridate in the Hamptons. And if you look at the zip codes that have wealthy people, they do not fluoridate as a rule. Like Beverly Hills, California, they don't fluoridate because they said the fluoride's already naturally in the water. But if you do a fluoride test, there really isn't fluoride in the water. But you go to like the poor people, the people that are lower income, they have heavy amounts of fluoridation, and this is a neurotoxin. If children grow up drinking fluoridated water, they can lose up to 10 points of their IQ for life.
Yeah, and also why on a tube of toothpaste, you know, like a couple years ago, if you eat too much of it, why do you have to call poison control? So what is in it? And there's several other chemicals I've read, one being lead, and there's another chemical, I don't know which one it was, but each of these can lower kids' IQs by 5 points. So does that explain what we see going on today? I mean, you get three chemicals, you could lower it up to 15 points.
Yeah.
It happened to the adults too.
And not to mention, there's also the idea of like this transgenerational response where we're just handing these toxins down to kids and then to grandkids. You know, I've seen studies where they say that, a mother exposed to, I don't remember exactly if it was lead or mercury or one of these chemicals, that their grandchildren will carry on all the way down to the grandchildren, you know? So, and that's the same thing I believe for metabolic syndrome, for diabetes, where you feel the effects of the food and the chemicals that your grandmother was exposed to. And if you think that, we know that the chemicals just becoming more and more abundant in the environment, and if they're already getting passed down, like if I'm feeling my grandma's chemicals from the 1950s, I can't imagine what my grandkids are going to feel, 70 years from now or whatever it is. It's the chemical thing is pretty wild. And this is why I stress things like detoxification and proper detoxification, you know, sweating and just really focusing on, sometimes it's not about taking in more. Sometimes it's about, you know, figuring out how to properly eliminate. And that gets you to the microbiome where people's microbiomes are so jacked up that they can't eliminate. You know, you have people who are like, I poop once a week. Like that's terrible.
Yeah. That's the thing is, we're at a point in time where getting good nutrition is very difficult. The food has had a real decline in its nutrient value since the 1970s. Professor Donald Davis at UT Texas Austin and his team of researchers found real declines in food over the last half century. So if you were eating an apple in 1970, it had a lot of vitamin A in it, whereas now it doesn't, generally speaking. And so you're not getting the nutrition. And what that leads to is people that are not going to be as healthy as they used to. And you look at the biomarkers of aging for people that are in high school now. Now, that's not true for everybody, but overall, the aging markers for students in high school is, I've heard, as high as 40 years old in some cases. And so if they're 40-year-old and their bio age is 40 years old when they're coming out of high school, how old are they going to be when they're 40? You know, and that indicates a decreased lifespan for people that are teenagers now. And it's a frightening prospect. And no one seems to cover that.
Yeah. And when you walk through a high school and you see the food that the kids are eating, you know, mm-hmm. I remember my high school, like the big thing was when we had a Taco Bell in our high school. Mm-hmm. And it was like the first time we had a Taco Bell. And it was like, of course, I was like 16. Of course, I'm going to go get Taco Bell every single day with a Coke, you know, and there's soda machines and snack machines all over the, you know, with all of these chemicals that we know lower IQ and have these devastating effects on metabolism and fat and, you know, even cause cancer.
Well, you see, the fast foods are designed to be addictive. Mm-hmm. They put like, you know, the high fructose corn syrup, which is an addictive thing. If you start consuming high fructose corn syrup or sugar, it's the same as being an addict to any drug. You're going to want more and more and more. And so, you know, if you can manufacture foods that make people want to continuously eat it, whether it's not, even if it's not good for them, that's a money making thing. And so, what do you think, Susan?
Yeah, well, Lustig's most recent book was kind of, you know, Hacking of Corporate America or something. He mentions that, like, the food, you know, are stimulated to increase your dopamine, which is the chemical involved in addiction. And, you know, and that kind of leads to pleasure, whereas serotonin, he connects more with happiness. So, I'm sure these companies have marketers and people studying how to, you know, get people to respond on TV. I mean, you know, waiting for a click on your cell phone that gets adrenaline going, get your dopamine going. So they have a certain delay or something. I mean, I'm sure they've got experts calculating this to, you know, get us subconsciously to want these things. I mean, you know, I mean, who can resist a donut when it comes in? Oh, glazed and warm.
Yeah, donuts are best when the hydrogenated fat hasn't congealed yet.
Oh, I don't know. It's just something yum, yum. And then I feel yuck later.
It is amazing when you start to turn it around and you start to realize like, oh, I feel better naturally. And, you know, I think I'm getting healthy. And then you have a donut and you feel that brain fog and that crash. And I mean, it lasts for some people for a couple of days, you know, and you just realize like, wow, there are people who feel this every single day. And it's just their normal. It's just the normal to feel this lull. And then it gets diagnosed as depression. And then they get on the pills. And then the whole thing starts.
Well, you know, hydrogenated oil was invented as a lubricant. They invented it to lubricate submarines. And it didn't work as a submarine lubricant. So they tried to make soap out of it. And it didn't make it soap, but they realized when you fried in it, things were crispy. But hydrogenated oil, the vegetable oils are very, very unhealthy.
Yeah, lots of inflammation. And canola oil was originally a motor oil, very highly processed, very bad for the health. Glyphosate is an antibiotic. It's going to affect your gut. And a chelator, so you can just grab onto anything. It can open your blood-brain barrier like EMF and just carry the chelated stuff right into the brain.
The oil is the biggest mind fuck, I really believe. The vegetable oil. The fact they call it vegetable oil. And I, you know, here in Puerto Rico, I don't remember seeing this when I was in the States. I lived in New York for a while and they try to, you know, have this kind of woke health consciousness thing in New York. So I feel like I was kind of removed from the mainstream American, you know, kind of junk food industrial complex for a little while. But now that I'm in Puerto Rico and I'll go to Costco or just even driving around, it's the way that they market vegetable oil and they call it heart healthy. The first place I lived, there was a giant billboard and it was for vegetable. I couldn't read it in Spanish, but all I saw was two giant, you know, jugs of clear, I don't know, is it brown or golden vegetable oil in the plastic containers, and then a big picture of a heart. And they're literally telling people like this stuff is good for your heart. And people think that, and they go and they buy it by the tub and they cook with it and they heat it and it becomes incredibly toxic.
If you look at a map, there's a map of the United States of where heart attacks are prevalent, where you have coronary artery disease and so forth. And that area follows right up the Mississippi River and through Louisiana. And what it turns out, the heart attacks in the United States are a lot higher in areas that eat fried foods. And so, you know, hydrogenated oil, deep fried, is one of the best things to give you a heart attack or coronary artery disease ever. And with lots of the Hispanic foods, you know, when you used to make a tamale was made out of pork fat, which is a whole lot healthier. It's not healthy, but it's a whole lot healthier than hydrogenated Crisco. But now they just take Crisco and they mix it with cornmeal, and that is 80% of a tamale. And so it's gone from being mildly unhealthy to a major poison if you eat a lot of it. And so you just got to watch these things.
Yeah, it's bonkers. You know, while we're on this topic, I just thought of this this thing. So, you know, I've been doing my own research into the idea of like saturated fat, and and saturated fat is demonized as being the bad fat. And I mean, I'm not enough of an expert to say, you know, saturated fat is good or not. I think it's better, you know, it's like, what is good relative to what, right? But I do know that when they come out with these studies and they say, see, saturated fat causes heart attacks, you really have to dig into the actual methods of what they're doing in those studies. So one of them, I did that, and this study basically gave saturated fat to rats, and they observed that the rats that got saturated fat, compared to the rats that didn't, they had cardiac events more frequently. Well, when you actually dig into the method of what they use for saturated fat, they used corn oil for saturated fat. They called corn oil saturated fat. And you know, then they, but they don't put that in the headlines. You know, I might've even found this through like a news headline and clicked on the study and then brought it up in the Sci-Hub. And, so it's like, you have to dig into that, the actual data, because it's there. It's just not advertised.
Well, there are some healthy oils. There's like coconut oil. There's olive oil. There's some oils that are really good for you and really healthy, but it's not the ones that like Crisco or corn oil or any of these inexpensive oils you buy in a grocery store.
Yeah, avocado oil is also good. And what's horrifying, you look at any street food, they've got that big plastic container with that yellow, ucky oil. It just, what?
Yeah. When I was in New York, I used to do these walking tours around Lower Manhattan, and I would take people into Chinatown. And I would go into Chinatown several times a week. And every single time I was going through Chinatown, you would just see somebody, I mean, wheeling these wheelbarrows full of canola oil into the Chinese restaurants. And that's what they're cooking with. And they're putting it on these deep fryers and these grills, and they're just reusing that oil over and over again. And it's brutal.
Reusing the oil is very dangerous. I even remember that from medical school, that when you reuse the oil, like for French fries, it'll change those bonds from, like, I guess, cis to trans across, and it's very carcinogenic. You get trans fat that way. So reusing oil, you go into a store and they're reusing the oil for French fries. That's trans fat, and that's the fastest route to a heart attack. You want to have a heart attack, do that.
There you go. That's great advice. Yeah, it's brutal. And I think maybe one failure of the entire health system is the fact that we are so focused on macronutrients, where it's like everyone's like, I have to have this much protein, and I can't have this carbohydrate or this fat, but it's really the ingredients. It's like, we need to focus on ingredients. It's like, you can have fat, but what is the fat? Is it olive oil, or is it canola oil? Is it, you know, butter from a grass-fed animal, or is it, you know, vegetable oil that was made in a lab somewhere in Missouri, you know? So I think if people shifted that focus to what is the quality, what is the actual ingredient that we're getting, then we start there, and then we start to have a real conversation about health.
Yeah, a comment on that is, if you eat a lot of meat, too much protein, it'll convert into kind of sugar, raising your insulin. You'll have the same result as if you eat a lot of sugar. However, if you eat that meat with fat, you don't get the insulin spike, and the insulin spike is what you want to avoid. But if you're going to eat the fat, that's where all the toxins are stored. You know, in us, the toxins are stored in our fat, and then same with animals. So you want to eat grass-fed and make sure that they're not getting the insecticides. I mean, we're giving arsenic to chicken to fatten them up. You want to make sure they don't have the hormones, and the antibiotics are fed. So even just eating too much protein can jack your sugars up in your insulin response, leading you toward diabetes. So eat it with the fat, but make sure it's healthy fat.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when it comes to this idea of grass-fed, even that's now starting to get bastardized by the food industry. And they're like, well, our stuff's grass-fed. Every piece of meat you buy is grass-fed. Is it grass-finished? You know, because they finish these animals on corn, and then they slaughter them. And they, you know, this is the whole business model of the CAFO. But that has something to do, I believe, with government subsidies in the corn, right? Because, you know, the government subsidizes the corn, and then all this corn, most of the corn goes to feeding the animals to begin with.
Well, you see, back in the 70s, right at the beginning of the 70s, we reached a point where conventional farming would no longer feed everybody. So they had to come up with a method for producing lots and lots of food, whether it was good or not. And so you go to this massive corn subsidy, and you have tons and tons of corn, which can be turned into feed for animals or all kinds of corn products. And you then are living on corn. And actually, they have a way of testing, like they take the average human being now, and you can take a sample of your hair, and you can actually determine what the hair was actually made from, what the human being was eating. And now you'll see that it's a ton of corn that make up our bodies. This cheap corn that they subsidize, it ends up everywhere.
Now, the thing about corn is 95% of it is genetically modified, which is a problem. And one of the people in our movie told me that he actually spoke to Obama's cook and talked about high fructose corn syrup, and and the cook told this person that, yeah, Obama knows about it, but he can't do anything about it because of the corn farmers.
Because of the corn farmers or because of the government officials who manage that whole thing? Because wherever, he doesn't want to put the corn farmers out of work.
Whatever the money comes from.
But yeah.
He knew, but he couldn't do anything.
Michael Pollan writes about this in his book. One of his more popular books. I can't remember the name of it. The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Okay, yeah.
And he talks about the corn subsidies and the corn farmers, and you know, basically they're just trapped in this cycle where they have to raise corn because it's basically the way they get paid. It's basically their welfare. They get the money from the government, and they have to buy these seeds, and you know, they have to plant the government corn, and this is basically guaranteed income versus if they were just like their own independent farmer, they're kind of on their own. But you know, because I don't know if there's land rights and things like that into this, but you know, there's just a lot of government control in the growing of corn, and they use these farmers essentially it's a welfare system.
Yeah. Well, they wanted to make a system where food would not be expensive. And so you actually have a lot of food that's not really a food. It doesn't really have any benefit for you, except it's something you can put in your mouth, like the corn and some of the synthetic of the wheat that they've made and so forth. But you have lots and lots of it. But if you look around at the people that don't spend a lot of money on their food, and you see all kinds of problems with their health and massive obesity, you know, if someone lives off of corn and wheat and all of that stuff, they're going to become very obese, especially if they drink all these sodas with the high fructose corn syrup. And so you see this huge rise in obesity, which I feel like Susan to chime in on this, but it's actually when you get really tremendously obese, that's a form of malnutrition going on because you're eating a lot of food that has no nutrient. And so you're eating more and more and more just to get more nutrient that you need. What would you say about that, Susan?
Well, I know that's Dr. I guess it was Dr. Glidden's theory or somebody's theory. But anyway, obesity is bad for you any way you go around. It's got all your toxins. It's, you know, it means you're highly inflamed. Oxidative stress is going to set you up for any chronic disease, depending on where your vulnerabilities are.
Yeah, there was a doctor in your film, I forget which one, but he did make the statement that it was like, you go to the Cheesecake Factory, you eat 3,000 calories, and then you go home and you're still hungry. And, you know, I don't know the data on this personally, but I mean, there is something to be said that when you eat that much food, essentially you're just eating cardboard. You're just eating corn cardboard, and your cells aren't being nourished. You know, like I could eat 700 calories of, you know, organ meats and good, you know, locally grown vegetables cooked in the right, you know, good fats, and I'll feel completely satiated, you know. But I could also go to McDonald's and I could eat 2,000 calories of, you know, fried fat or fried garbage and wheat and, you know, burger and all this stuff and still be hungry. I would still need to eat something. So, you know, yeah, I think the phrase is, what is it? Fed and starving to death or full and starving to death or something like that. You know, you just never satiated. So you just keep eating.
Right. Because Glidden said that you had to have 90 things every day, which was around 60 minerals, and then the rest is vitamins and amino acids. And so I don't know if that's totally correct, but I do know your body has to have what it needs to work. And you're not going to get that out of just eating, you know, cornmeal all day, especially from a GMO source. And so people that don't have a lot of money, they don't get really good food and they don't get nutrition. And then they have a whole plethora of illnesses derived from the fact that they are not nutrified.
Yeah. And this is where the whole sick care system, this is why the sick care system gets its name, because it's, you know, it's like the government gives you this subsidized corn food that, you know, I mean, what's the real cost of a burger or of, you know, of one of these food products should be, you know, much higher than it is. I've seen the actual cost of McDonald's burger should actually be something like $12 or $15, but it's, you know, it's the price it is because of these subsidies. And, you know, it's like a gateway. It's like a drug dealer giving you a little sample, and then you get sick, and then you got to go to the doctor, and now you're on this perpetual merry-go-round of, you know, this pharmaceutical, this side effect. And it just goes back to the beginning of this conversation, which is you jump on and it's very, very hard to get off.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, it's just tragic, because what you have is, when you get on this food that doesn't have any nutrition and you eat a lot of it, and you end up getting diabetes, and then you end up getting all the complications from diabetes, and it gets so bad that you're cutting off your feet, you're cutting off your legs because of the diabetes. When if someone had good nutrition and they had good advice on what to eat and how to eat, they would have never been in that situation in the first place. So I think it's really sad when you could, you know, you get someone, and it's hard to get people to change because it's an addiction thing. They're addicted to this food. And so, but they'll keep eating it, and it ends up with horrible health problems, you know, and you end up with someone in a wheelchair because they no longer have any legs or something, because they just never got the food they needed. And the doctors didn't have the instructions set or whatever to tell them, hey, you need to change what you're eating. You need to go this way. And then, you know, Susan, what do you think about that?
I want you to think about your colleague that you were on the same health plane, and you chose one route and the other, and your colleague chose the route to have his legs cut off.
Yeah, you know, and I would have been there probably if I hadn't learned what I learned.
Yeah, what he's saying is that his health was pretty much equal to a colleague of his, and Alex obviously chose a route of trying to be nutrified. And the colleague wanted to stay on his own path, and the colleague just had his legs cut off as a wheelchair. And they were in the exact same place maybe 5 years, 4 years ago.
About 7 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it's sad because I look at these people that are so sick, and if they just knew, or if they were able, I mean, choosing to eat the right foods is expensive. And it's a lot of work figuring out, because everybody's body is different, and you have to figure out what's right with you. But there are generalities with the food you should eat to be healthy. And you know, you've got this big addiction you have to overcome, because if you've been eating, you know, sugary foods, high carb foods, and all this stuff that is programmed to make you an addict, and you try to go to eating things like spinach or healthy fruits, healthy salads, and all the things that are good for you that you have been programmed to think taste terrible, you have to overcome that and start eating good food. And when you start eating good food, you realize how terrible the food was that you were eating. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you know, a lot of people go down this addiction path with bad foods, and they end up costing a fortune for medical care. And, you know, that makes a lot of money for the medical system, but it's really devastating for the people involved.
Yeah, it's the mental manipulation of the food, because it saps your motivation. It saps your will, and it legitimately lowers your IQ. It legitimately manipulates your pineal gland, whether it's the fluoride or it's these different chemicals, and you don't have any more instincts, natural human instincts. Like, mm-hmm. I love this analogy of us being animals. Like, you know, you see a deer in the wild go up to, you know, a piece of fruit on a tree, and it knows, it'll smell it, and it knows whether it's to eat it or not eat it. And we have that same instinct. It's just, we also have this, you know, this ego, this front brain that won't let us rely on the back brain to make instinctual decisions like this. And the instinctual decision we make is, well, if a McDonald's burger is $3, or, you know, an organic salad with good meats and good nutrients is $12, well, I'm going to go with the cheaper thing because it's survival, right? But like you said, you don't see the downhill costs of, now you're just starting to get on that path of in and out of doctor's offices and prescriptions, and then you become one of these people who has to wait in line at a pharmacy. And if you can't, let's say if you lose your job, you lose your health insurance, now you're in a complete, you know, area of disaster, because now you've been addicted to these substances. And it's all by design. There's nobody questioning, you guys are doing it, but there's nobody in the quote unquote mainstream questioning this. And sadly enough, if you do question it, you end up on Google as a quack. They have the quack report. And right. A lot of doctors who I respect, and I'm sure you guys know of, are on these quack reports, and there's nothing quack about them. Everything they say is, you know, verified by science. All they do is quote, you know, medical papers and research, but yet because they don't follow the orders from whatever the powers that be, you know, they're the ones who get labeled quacks. And again, it goes back to survival in the consumer's brain of, well, who am I going to follow, the authority, or am I going to follow somebody that makes me actually think independently?
I would like to chime in here. You're talking about that we know what we should eat. When I interviewed Fred Provenza, he did a lot of work with animals, and the animals instinctively know what to eat unless you muck up their diets. But also he refers to studies that human beings, until they're two or three, will naturally go to the foods they need. But once they get the junk food interference from our society, they lose that ability. So he's saying children, before they get all this junk, will go to what they need, but after the junk, no. And a way to live, I mean, get some of this food relatively independently, I mean, cheaply, is the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. You know, you go there, they bring their wares, you've got organic everything, and that's probably the cheapest way to eat and probably the most healthy stuff. It's local and it's fresh.
I love the farmer's market because A, the food is better for you. B, it actually tastes better. Like, you forget what nutrition actually tastes like. But C, you're just giving money to the farmer. You know, there's no middleman, you know, there's no credit card machine. There's no, you know, grocery store supply chain. It's just direct, you know, product to consumer. And the farmers are better off, and you're basically paying with your dollar. Like, to me, this is the most democratic thing we could do. You want to talk about democracy in the United States, vote with your dollar and give it to the people who are doing it right.
Well, the farmer's market food is fresh. That's one thing. You know, if you go to a farmer's market, it probably was picked maybe a week before. If you go to a grocery store, it may be 3, 4, 5 weeks old. They've been refrigerating it. They've been actually taking a tomato that was picked green and spray food color on it. And so, you know, unfortunately, most grocery stores do not have healthy produce. And so, you know, you go to some of the ones that specialize in healthy foods, maybe, but you have to be really careful about that. Another thing is, if you have the availability, grow the food in your backyard or something at home. Or if you have any way of growing food for yourself, you know, that's always helpful.
Absolutely.
And markets take credit cards. The farmer's market takes credit cards.
Oh, they do take credit. There you go. Well, you know, that makes things easier for some people. I think it's just the grocery store, you know, supply chain, and that just gets in the way. And it's like you said, Alex, it's by the time it gets to you, it's already lost, you know, a good chunk of its nutritional value. And, you know,
yeah,
it's not food at that point.
Well, it's sad because a lot of places are losing their farmer's markets, you know. In Dallas, where I live actually north of Dallas, we had one of the largest farmers markets ever, but the city decided it would be nicer if they turned it into another purpose. And so they closed down the farmers market and put in something like a boutique area. They still sell food, but it's things like donuts and things like that, and maybe women's dresses and so forth. So a large portion of the people that live near that farmers market no longer have a farmers market to go to anymore.
That's awful.
Yeah, and so they don't have any grocery stores. It's the poor areas of town. It's hard to find a place to get good produce for the people.
Wow. Well, this has been, I mean, an absolutely fascinating conversation. Like I said, I loved your guys' film. I encourage anybody listening to this to go check out The Big Secret. You can get it on Vimeo, I believe.
Yeah, go to the BigSecretMovie.com, and it'll link you right to the movie.
Great.
Also, I'd like to give a plug, the Silicon Valley Health Institute, that's SVHI.com. We've got weekly Zoom meetings with experts, so you can Zoom in and ask your question. Also, my radio show, Occupy Health, which is on Voice America, where I also interview all the experts who are going to say it as it is and not as the government wants us to say.
That's great. I'm going to put those links in the show notes. You can catch that at holisticnootropics.com/podcast. And then anybody listening can go there. You can click the links and then you can go check out the movie. You can check out Susan's Integrative Physician Silicon Valley Health Institute Zoom meetings. You can check out her podcast. So anybody listening to this will be able to find all of this information. And if you're like me, this topic of the intersection of health and government and, you know, how do we build a better healthcare system? And I believe The Big Secret discusses that, you know, you go through the the metamorphosis of why we got to where we are now, but then you also leave us with the solution. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but I think we've been talking a little bit about it here today. So it's absolutely amazing. I highly recommend it. And it sounds like you're coming out with a new movie soon, or you're working on a new movie, which...
It's called Toxified.
Toxified? Do you have a release date for that?
2 years ago.
Oh, you have two movies.
No.
We've been working on it for a while, but things have been changing, but we're hoping to get the editing finished this summer.
Okay. So yeah. Cool. Well, there you go. You've been able to socially distance enough to hunker down in an editing dock and get it done. So we'll be expecting it soon.
Both of us have been working full time. There's no social distancing or relief. I thought this would be a great period of meditative contemplation and, just a great growth period. Nah, it didn't happen.
Right. Well, as soon as that comes out, I'd love to have you guys back on to talk about that movie and just whatever I can do to help you guys out. I think you have a great message and more people need to hear it. So, Alex and Susan, thank you so much for joining me on the Holistic Nootropics podcast. For more on Alex and Susan's work, go on over to holisticnootropics.com/podcast. Check out the show notes and all the links to their work, and we'll catch you on the next podcast. Thanks so much for watching.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more brain-boosting info, in-depth articles, and show notes, check out holisticnootropics.com.